Welcome to the Banking with Life podcast. I'm your host, James Nethery, and I'm excited to share with you that we've created a new series. This is a topical series where we've taken previously recorded clips, compiled them by topic, idea, and particular concepts within the infinite banking footprint and the financial world broadly. Topics will include loans, loan repayments, paid up additions riders, other riders, dividends, long-term thinking, what could go wrong, what does go wrong within the infinite banking footprint. And I hope you enjoy listening. And it was created for your edification. Thank you.
This year I told my wife, I said, I'm using, you know, this policy on one of my parents is going to be our budget for home repairs, you know, to a certain level. And so we got the house painted and we did some interior stuff. Like I had ran Ethernet to this computer that I'm talking to you on, and I kind of messed up one of the walls in the living room. I mean, it was like, you know, I'm not a drywaller, James. I'm an engineer. And so, you know, we had, you know,
you don't do the work on the construction side. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah. I was like, yeah, people make fun of me because they're like, you're really good with a mouse and a keyboard. But so we had the people come in and I took care of all that with, you know, taking loans and paying the loans back from a policy and growing that policy. It was phenomenal. Like it was the most stress-free thing. And now, you know, the ceiling looks beautiful again. And I used, you know, that I was solving a problem of just not having to worry about what happens when my parents graduate. But now I'm getting the benefit of using that as a budget or a bucket to take care of any type of home stuff. And we had, like I said, we had the house painted. We had some interior stuff done. Amazing, amazing, amazing stuff. And it was just so easy. And I remember, James, even my wife was like, how can we afford all this? And I was like, well, we have this warehouse of wealth. And I say, just, you know, it's, you put our money to work. And I've had to explain to friends, because I've talked about this concept with a few friends and they don't understand that whole, like, your money grows compound interest uninterrupted forever until you graduate. And you, when you borrow, you're actually borrowing the life insurance company's money, and, you know, at a reasonable rate, which is like typically simple interest, it's 8% now in new policies, but 5 to 8%, give or take. And that's all coming back to you. And people, like, if you haven't checked out Nelson's book, like look at the illustrations. When a person doesn't use their policy and they just graduate, what happens, you know, when they're 65 versus when they use it heavily, the difference is 9 days. It's a 3 times, 4 times, it could be a 5 times increase in how that policy is going to perform. And I'm happy to say, like, every year I have maxed out everything I could pay and I get within like $10 of modified endowment contract limits, so that I'm an honest banker, pay my loans back, and I'm pushing as much as I can into this vehicle and then borrowing money to live my life and cover my expenses. My son's 13. We've had some, and we've been doing, like I said, we've been doing this for 5 years. Some years ago, James, he even wanted to get a smartphone. And I, you know, we're the type of parents who are like, yeah, you're going to be responsible for it. So I said, you're going to buy your phone using cash values from the policy that on you that I control. And you're going to pay that back every month with income that you're getting from allowances and a little bit of work you're doing. And he ended up paying that phone off early. And now, fast forward to now, we're getting new phones, because that's what you have to do in this world, James. You know, everything gets recycled and we're getting to get new phones because they become obsolete. And so now we're getting new phones. We're doing the same thing again. And of all the phones we're turning in, his actually has the highest value. So I told my son, like, your new phone is the cheapest because you got the biggest discount because you paid your phone off early and you've owned it for a long time. So congratulations, son, you saved the most money, you know, between the three, among the three of us. And so he's going to get the same phone as mom and dad. So all three of us are going to have the same exact phone. And, you know, he's 13. And some of his friends have like what I would just call burner phones. Like they can only do like limited things. And, you know, for whatever reason, how their parents are doing it with their kids. But it's like, this is just cool that he can learn how to finance it. because he's still financing it through his system, and he gets the benefit of having it. And when he paid it off, I showed him, I said, here's what your policy was forecasted to do if we had not used it. And here's what it's doing now. Like when it started, James, the death benefit was less than $1 million. And now just with a little bit of usage, the death benefit's now over $1 million. And it's grown and it's growing and it's outperforming. So I'll say like every policy that I've had is far outperforming all the original illustrations because of what I've done with the policies.
Once you get this set up, it's kind of like set it and forget it. You just keep capitalizing and then you have your loan payments on automatic and you're the bank. You're just moving along.
Well, I'm with you and I agree with that. The premium, you know, if the policy structured correctly and the client understands what they have and why they have it and why it's built the way it is, and here's the premium amount and here's what you can do and what you can't do with the premium. And then, you know, if you make loans, then of course you shouldn't make loans without a loan repayment. Right. Whether it's methodically monthly, or if you're doing flips, it's going to be in 6 months or 9 months and or 3 months or whatever it is. But there should be a clear cut way that the loan is going to be repaid. Those are very simple, you know, in my mind. I agree with you.
It's a system you would use just like the bank. You're just the bank. And the thing that I love about this, it just hit me one day. I'm like, oh man, you are rewarded in this system for two things, for saving and for paying off debt. You are rewarded for that.
The legacy is built in.
And the world doesn't reward you. See, this is how you know the kingdom of darkness and the kingdom of light, right? In the kingdom of light, you get rewarded for things. In the kingdom of darkness, you don't. And so this is just, to me, it just is such a beautiful system that you can build. And now, you know, my son's getting married this summer, so we're preparing to bring his new wife into the family bank. You know, I have plans already in my mind of how we'll onboard grandchildren and all of those things. And of course, I'm just following Nelson's playbook, and Nelson got it from the Lord. So it's brilliant. Oh, my husband might walk in for lunch.
Oh, perfect. Maybe he'll say hi. Okay, so can I ask, you know, to the extent that you're comfortable, you know, what y'all have done or what you're doing, you know, I get the legacy and it's important, and congratulations on your sons and your new, you know, soon-to-be daughter-in-law. And I get that legacy is important. There's no question. And I agree, a good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children, not because I believe it, because it's, you know, written in the Bible and it's truth. So, you know, with life insurance and you're managing your cash flows and you're using your policies with everything that you were going to do anyway, whether it's finance, a car, education, vacation, whatever it is. And then if you're honestly, you know, repaying those loans, there's going to be some time in the future that you may want to change the way you enjoy income, right? Passive income time. And whenever, even after you do that, right? So you've built policies, or one could build policies and do everything that they were going to do anyway. They get into passive income time. They enjoy tax-free, tax-favored income. There's still a net death benefit if you're taking the income through withdrawals, or you're taking the income through loans, or you're doing both. There's still a net death benefit, you know, and you have one generation now, you have several children, and then here, which is a natural order of things. Your son's going to get married, you know, they fall in love, they're going to get married, they're going to have children, and then that's a third generation. Then when you incorporate them, then you're talking about and actively doing something for the fourth and fifth generation.
Exactly.
I mean, that's so powerful.
And I'm trying to think through how to make sure my children are well trained, right? So that when I check out, they understand how to keep things moving down the line. I think too, when you're in business, so what we've used our policies for, a couple of different things. for the kids, they have financed their cars through their policy. Well, my sons have. And then my daughter will, she is just getting ready to do that next month. And so those are things where that's the first kind of easiest way to get started for them, to just have that car be their first way of recapitalizing back their policies. And then for me, I've used our policies for larger real estate development, land purchasing, things where I was doing a new build and needed to have some capital to begin that project, knowing that that project was going to sell, and then I'd harvest that money back, pay back the loan, and then keep moving. So those are also things that I'm using the policy for in business.
So did you do that through 2019, 2020, through COVID and all that?
Yeah.
Okay. And then can I, you know, not like I said, I want you to be comfortable. I don't want you to share anything that you don't want to share. I don't want that at all. But you development, so you purchased real estate and developed it and then sold it.
Right.
So right. Do y'all do buy and holds, or is that what y'all do? Y'all develop and sell? Is that y'all's primary?
I do any and all. I have bought and held. I do short-term rentals. I do have a long-term rental. I kind of have a mix of those. I'm developing a small community of luxury Airbnbs in North Georgia in the mountains. So those are things where I'm working in conjunction with a builder up there. And some of those I'm keeping in my portfolio. Others of those I'm selling, you know, on the market, out in the market. So yeah, whatever, that's what I love about this, is you just have to be prepared for whatever comes along. I don't know what's coming along. I just am waiting for the opportunity. And when I see something, and if the numbers make sense, then we go for it.
Has having access to capital changed the way an opportunity looks, or has it changed the way or modified the way that you vet an opportunity? Has there been any impact? You know, because you have access to this capital, so here's an opportunity. And because you have access to the capital, it may have changed what you determined to be an opportunity, or?
It just makes life easier because you're not having to go to the stinking bank and give them 100 million pieces of information. You just can do the deal, you know?
The way we structure policies, you know, just in our practice, is very purposeful. You know, it's intentional. It's not just like, yeah, oh, this ratio is good and it's good for all. No, it's very intentional. So you were able to lower the premium, and then you were able to raise the premium back up. Have you caught premiums back up that you've lowered before? And
we have not moved those up yet. Now it's just attacking the policy loans. Okay. And for a while, I talked with Jake just early, a couple of weeks ago. So from the philosophy was premiums first, like find whatever you have to do. If you have to sell a bike.
And you did that.
Yeah.
Even though you had to lower them, you did that.
Yep. So premiums first, keep that in force. All that hard work would be for nothing. The second thing was always putting as much as you could in the LPUA. And then it was kind of like the dollars into LPUA and pennies into policy loans. But at some point, though, you know, not having any policy loans outstanding is a Sarah and Scott goal. So we have, for the first year, kind of not maxed out LPUA in focusing on paying down the policy loans.
Is there anything wrong with that? Could we call Sarah now and not going to, but I mean, just think that through. Is there anything wrong with that?
You're giving up a little bit of the dividend growth within the LPUA by not putting that in there. But I would say from peace of mind, having access down the road, I think having those policy loans paid off would barely be the most. And I think it's also those policy loans kind of are a reminder of what we went through. So I think there's some psychological benefit to offsetting the LPUA for a little while and focus on policy.
I've done that personally. Early on, I've done that, and it's psychological. You know, I'm looking at a debt you know, yes, and I don't align with the philosophy that, oh, you can borrow all the cash value you want and you never have to pay it back. When that comes out of someone's mouth, you need to swipe left, right, or keep scrolling, right? But, I mean, I've been in that position where, you know, you paid as much premium as you possibly could, and for whatever, you're either going into a business, expanding, whatever it is you're doing, you need that capital, so you collateralize the cash value. Now you've got all these great big outstanding loans, right? And it's very uncomfortable. And, you know, you've got to do what's right for you.
Yeah.
Right.
But they grow at the rate that you expect. Because from my standpoint, it's a very easy math policy loan. Like, you know, if you blow it off at the end of the year, it's going to be probably at this number. So there's no like hidden, you don't need a scientific calculator to figure out how much it's going to balloon to within a calendar year.
Yeah, there's no balloon payments.
No balloon payments.
There's no, the interest rates can move, and they do move, but not like 300%, you know, from the SBA. And so, you know, you've lowered the PUA premium. That's because that's what you can move up and down is the PUA premium. So you move that down to the minimums or whatever. The banker gets to do whatever they want. That is so powerful. And it's so true. And this is just an application of that.
Yeah.
And so you got suddenly uncomfortable, or maybe over time, you're uncomfortable with the outstanding loans. So the cash flow that was a premium to the LPUA is now more concentrated. There's still some going to the LPA, I'd assume.
Yeah.
And then now, but the lion's share of that cash flow is to the loan repayment. So if you, and I shouldn't be asking you personal questions anyway, but as the loan goes down, this is what happened in my case.
Yeah.
Okay. I had just about as much outstanding in loans as I could have outstanding in loans. And it was in 2008. We just purchased a property, just financed the down payment from policy loans, third-party lender for the rest of the purchase. And then we financed the remodeling of that through policy loans. The market crashes. Yep. I think it was 2008 and 2009. And all of a sudden, I became extremely uncomfortable having 90% of my policy cash values collateralized.
Right.
And so I did exactly what you and Sarah are doing, right? I'm like, oh my gosh, all of that premium is now going to go to a loan repayment. And we did that for several years. And then we looked back and then raised our premium back up and started doing catch-up premiums. And after several years, and all of that was a very valuable learning lesson for me, seriously. But looking back after a couple of years, I'm like, oh, everything worked out just fine anyway. Yep. It could have done either thing, but for comfort, that was the right thing for us to do at the time.
Right.
It was to focus on the loans.
Yeah. So. And I give Jake, your son, credit too, because he kind of helped. Because you want to make sure, like, you know, you want to be this darling of IBC and, you know, do all this, you know, pat on the back, I'm doing all the right things. And he said, no, I think for peace of mind, you and Sarah just focus on policy loans. Because it is like that was money that kind of kept us afloat while we were navigating the waters of COVID. And yeah, I think when those are paid off, then you kind of don't have that. You kind of get to say bye. That was a chapter. So yeah, I agree with folks trying to figure out that whatever works for you personally, and know that, you know, policy is still getting more efficient as time goes on.
So looking back, and would you have done things different knowing, you know, looking back, you would have known COVID was coming. You know, would you have postponed buying life insurance, permanent life insurance cash value? Or would you have done anything different?
I think I wouldn't have done anything different other than I would, you know, go back to that 20-year-old and say, he might be an interesting character, but there's some validity to this.
I got to ask, you know, your friend, because I love to give my friends a hard time. They give me a hard time, and all of our friends do. You know, if you love and care about them, it's okay. They love and care about you. So you busted your friend's chops that was in the insurance business forever, and then you bring him a book. You know, would you share any about that conversation?
So he did. I got him to read the book. Well, he didn't read it in front of me. I didn't witness this, but I believe him when he says he read it. But if you're not initiated, if you're not inclined to it, you can read this thing and just not get anything out of it, right? Yeah. It's a story. It's got these anecdotes in it. It's got these tables of numbers. It didn't grab him, right? Like you said, it's caught rather than taught. Well, he didn't catch it. But in a related to this, he has on himself and on his wife, they have life insurance policies that he bought independently, right? Just as you do, other people other than me do. And so over the years, I've talked to him about this, told him what I'm doing. So he gets the concept. He still hasn't caught it, but he was talking about purchasing something for his little ranch. He's got a 10 acre thing that he wanted some piece of equipment. I think it was wanting to replace a tractor. And I asked him about it. Had he thought about using cash value on his policy? And of course he hadn't. And he went and looked at it, called his agent. Next thing I know, he calls me back and says, "Hey, I just bought that tractor using cash, you know, out of my policy." So we're one step closer, right, to getting him to buying a banking policy. But I don't know any of the details. He showed me the cover page of his policy, but I don't know any of the details, you know, what do you call it? Participating, non-participating, any of that. Anyway, yeah. So I've made some progress. I haven't converted him yet. I'm still waiting for my first sale.
I got it. That's awesome though. You know, here you got an insurance agent and he's got a life insurance policy and, you know, never really thought. And that's really, you know, Nelson really added scale to what you can do. Nelson didn't create the loan provisions in a life insurance company contract. Mm-hmm. You know, the life insurance companies did. And they did that years ago as a way to avoid lapsing a policy. Oh, we'll have some cash value in here. So if it'll endow in the future, right? And you can walk away with all your money. Oh, well, here's a loan provision. Instead of lapsing a policy, why don't you, you know, now you can contractually take a loan against your cash value. It's like, I think all of that's very cool. And whether the guy, you know, your friend actually buys life insurance or doesn't, at least you didn't harm him, you know, sharing Nelson's message. And so, now he's controlling the banking function on that piece of equipment. I mean, that could be right. A big deal. You know, it is a right. big deal in my opinion.
Right. I did go out of my way and more than once to tell him, you got to pay the thing back, right? It's not free money, right? You have to pay it back. So I need to check up. I need to follow up with him on that. Make sure he's being a good banker.
Because he's your friend. You can get away with it, right?
Well, that's right. That's right.
Well, I just think stuff like that is cool. You know, whether he's in a better position because of Nelson's work, you know, we got to meet and that's cool.
We've been talking about James and we're not even talking about the flexibility because with having the control and the power, well, by design, but having the control of sitting at all sides of that lending equation, that entity that you and Ryan were talking about on, episode 245, when you're at all seats of that table, and if you need to pivot or if the unknown happens and you don't want to or can't make a loan repayment, you know, on the schedule that you originally designed for yourself, because no loan should be taken without a repayment schedule, right? And being an honest banker is, we're not allowed to steal the peas if you're doing this right. That you can pivot, and that's like where is that on a you know, a financing contract with a traditional third party lender. So like I'll give you an example, because then this is how much I'm caring less about rates of interest and rates of return and loan interest and things, is that I think we were recording with, I had a 2 years ago, or maybe last year, I purchased a used vehicle because I don't drive it. But I don't.
Yeah, yeah, that was recorded.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so that was recorded. So I kind of casually, like I paid that, you know, that the loan amount was about $13,500. I initially, again, because I'm the lender, I'm the borrower, I'm the one that has to satisfy my own lending criteria, right? Is it something that I really want, or is it a need? If I need it, what is it that I need? And going through that whole process, but I originated that loan through a policy loan, and initially I was just like, well, what do I want? What do I want my car payment to be? Well, I get paid every other week. So I was like, well, I don't know. I'm not going to spend a lot of time thinking about it. I'm just going to every 2 weeks, $500, and just see what that feels like. Right. Cause I'm a feel person now with this concept, at least. Cause I know I'm not losing control over that $500. All I'm doing is reducing the loan balance. Right. So any associated interest that would be associated after, you know, for the term of that portion of the loan. Okay. There's going to be some interest to it, like, irrelevant to me now. But that volume of that payment goes, what? It reduces my outstanding loan balance, which my cash value goes back up. That death benefit associated with it gets pushed back up. So all I'm doing is I'm just filling up the pond of water. So if it's $500, we'll let it be $500 and see how that feels. So I did that for a couple of months, and I'm like, I'm not really feeling any different. Like, it's not challenging me. Right. Yeah. Well, just like you said, with our originally policy design, like, hey, what is it that you think that you can pay in premium and then just pay a little bit more, get a little, what makes you a little uncomfortable, you know? So I hear that even in my loan repayment. So it's like, well, it's $500. All right. That really, I didn't feel any, you know, physical pain or emotional pain with that. So let's just, I don't know, $750 on the next one and see what happens. And so I'm like, well, what crazy human being on a $13,000 car would pay $1,500 a month as a car payment? You know, and I'm like, well, I hope not many people, right? Especially if I was paying that to someone else. But all I was doing is, you know, replenishing my own pool of capital. So I'm like, well, if $750 like really hurt, okay, go back down to $500 because I can control that. Right. So it ended up, you know, I kept it at 750 like every 2 weeks. And I think it was, I don't know, it's within like 8 months or something that loan had been satisfied. Because I just have a little simple Excel spreadsheet for that, you know, for my car purchase. And so I went, and at the time, the loan rate was 5%. So 5% simple interest, whatever. So I go like, okay, well, that's annualized. So, but I did it in 10 months. So let's just kind of, you know, average daily balance, you know, for the outstanding loan. Let's just see like what the true interest rate, you know, just out of curiosity.
Yeah.
And it was like, that 1.2%. You
actually paid, right?
That I actually paid according. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it was like 1.2%.
What?
And I was going like, I think and get it. Like I get it more because of this one little exercise. Yeah. Of just kind of halfway paying attention that it wasn't 5%, it was 1%. I returned all the cash flow that would have been given to someone else. So one, the stated interest wasn't the real interest, right? All the capital has been returned to my policy. And I maintain control of the whole thing. And now, even as an added benefit, the vehicle itself is no longer a liability because it has some sort of value into the market. So if I want to get rid of it or anything, not having any lien on it or anything like that, I can actually sell that before I trade it in on something else. And now I have future PUA because I don't owe anything. Like, no one else is involved in this equation. So I'm like, well, what's that stinking really worth? I don't even know how to put a dollar amount on it.
No, you can't. You can't. And there's nowhere that any of that can go, you know, in a life insurance illustration. You can find that, you know, put numbers, you know, calculate. Well, the life insurance charged me 5 as an annual percentage loan rate. Mm-hmm. You accelerated the loan repayment because you were in control of that. So you didn't actually pay the 5% because the whole loan was not outstanding for the annual 12-month time period. You repaid it in 12 months. And it was 1.9? Is that what you said? 1.9?
No, it was like 1.1, 1.2.
1.1.
When I saw like the one handle, I just kind of snickered and just closed the file. I'm like, okay, this is silly.
Yeah. So the rate was 5, but you were only charged 1.1 because of your actions. I mean, there's so much there. It's like Nelson always said, and it's true, you know, the action of the owner has a greater bearing on the results than the life insurance company does. And that's with every policy. Every single policy. And then, you know, so we're talking about this.
But that's why, oh, sorry, go ahead, sorry.
No, no, you go ahead.
No, but I was like, that's why it's like the book and the principles are so important of one, not only reading, but actually understanding and then living it out because it just is. But that's like the discipline that, it's such a healthy discipline.
Thank you for joining us on the Banking with Life podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to like and subscribe and click on that little notification bell. Otherwise, join us on Apple Podcasts and Stitcher for weekly content.